Before I get into this mini episode, I have an amazing update to share with you all. If you don't follow me on IG, you may not have heard that Kareem Flake, the former boyfriend of Destiny Smothers, has been arrested and will be charged with Destiny's murder. For Destiny's story, you can check out my very first episode, which features her murder. But the long and short of it is that on her 26th birthday, Destiny disappeared from a Queens, New York bowling alley and was never heard from again. 4 months later, her body was found in the trunk of her own car. It was long believed by Destiny's family and friends that her boyfriend of 13 years and the father of her two children, Kareem Flake, was the culprit behind her death, but police were reluctant to press charges. According to Destiny's cousins that I spoke to at the time, the police didn't have enough evidence to ensure a conviction once brought to trial. Therefore, Kareem was given the opportunity to flee the state of New York, which he did, and found himself in Osceola, Florida, where he was later arrested for assaulting another woman. It's not known what new evidence police now have or if a witness came forward, but whatever it was, led police to issue the arrest warrant for his connection in Destiny's murder. As of now, the New York Police Department is awaiting the outcome of Kareem's pending Florida charge before seeking extradition back to New York. Guys, when I tell you this is such amazing news, it's an understatement. I feel so relieved that this monster is off the streets. On top of that, Destiny and her family are one step closer to getting the justice they deserve. I encourage you to set your Google alerts to notify you about any movement with this case, as I'm sure more will follow in the months to come. For today's episode, I will tell you about another tragic domestic abuse case that escalated to the murder of not one, but two innocent people by the hands of a coercive abuser. I'm Renetta Rideout, and this is Misogynoir Murders. At approximately 8:45 p.m. on Monday, October 4th, 2021, the Phoenix Police Department received a call about a domestic violence disturbance and officers were dispatched to the Cove Apartments complex in the area of 83rd Avenue and Thomas Road. When responding officers arrived, they found a very disturbed man standing in the parking lot shouting over and over again, quote, "They made me do it. They made me do it," end quote. The police really didn't know what was going on, but when they approached the screaming man, they learned that his name is Louis Mouton III. 34-year-old Louis was at the apartment complex to talk to his 32-year-old estranged wife, Lene Mouton. The more Louis talked, the more red flags popped up. The first being that Louis was outside rambling about what he was forced to do, and his wife was nowhere to be seen. Right from the start, police had a feeling that something terrible might have happened, so finding and talking to Lene became their number one priority. As responding officers approached the apartment Louis indicated he'd been at, they could see evidence of brutality. The front door was all but demolished. It was obvious it had been opened with extreme force and even looked like it had been shot. Officers knew something horribly violent happened in the apartment. The police didn't initially see Lene anywhere. They continued through the apartment and went inside the bedroom where they could see that door had also been opened with force. Once inside, officers saw what looked to be bullet holes penetrating the closed closet door. When they opened the door, they found Lene on the closet floor with her 11-month-old baby, Ava, in her arms. Both of them had been shot multiple times. It's not clear from any of the sources I read whether Lene and Ava were deceased when they were found, but emergency services personnel transported them to the nearest hospital, where, sadly, they were both pronounced deceased shortly after arriving. Their injuries were simply too severe to survive. The magnitude of the violence used to end the lives of this mother and her child shocked the community and law enforcement too. Everyone wanted to know what could have possibly led a father and husband to brutally murder his wife and youngest child. So, investigators wasted no time interrogating Lewis to find out exactly what went on in that apartment. Lewis told detectives that he and Lene had been together since she was just 16 years old and he was 18. They eventually got married and shared 4 beautiful children. But unfortunately, the couple had been separated on and off for the last few years. According to Lewis, he was put out of the apartment they once shared with his mother, Sawilla Mouton. And though he had been living at a halfway house for the last few months, he did come by the apartment wanting to talk to Lene about the relationship. You see, even though Lene and Lewis often went back and forth, she was serious this time about ending their relationship and she wanted a divorce. This wasn't the first, second, or even third time Lene wanted to get away from Lewis, but abuse cycles are so hard to end for a myriad of reasons. As police dig into the history of Lewis and his relationship with Lene, they find that he'd been abusing her for years. He even had a prior conviction in California for a domestic violence charge. Now, although I wasn't able to confirm who the victim was or any details really about that case, it's safe to assume the victim was Lene, considering their long relationship and the fact that they lived in the Hesperia area prior to moving to Phoenix. Anyway, so Lewis tells investigators that he and Lene had a conversation in the parking lot of their apartment complex, that same place where responding officers found him. He says Lene came out of the apartment holding baby Ava, and Lewis confronted her about the divorce she filed for. He tried convincing Lene that she didn't want to divorce him, and that his children needed him and God knows what else. But as the conversation between them progressed, it became clear that Lene wasn't budging. She wouldn't be manipulated or bullied away from her decision anymore. She was done, and just like that, she ended the conversation and returned to the apartment where her mother-in-law, Sawilla, and her sister-in-law were. A short, unspecified time later, Lewis broke into the apartment. Later, his mother said that she saw her son break into the apartment and she and her daughter ran outside, leaving Lene and Ava in the house. Lene ran to the bedroom where she hid in the closet with the baby. She screamed at the top of her lungs, begging Lewis not to kill her. But her pleas fell upon deaf ears because Lewis opened fire on the closet door, emptying the gun. And even though Lewis just shot into the closet his wife and baby were hiding in, he was convinced someone or something made him do it. Lewis told police that aliens and spirits told him to kill Lene, and they promised him that if he did so, they would be together forever. However, he's adamant that he was only supposed to kill Lene and not their baby daughter, and her death was truly a mistake. So much so of a mistake that after he killed them, he turned the empty gun on himself. But alas, there weren't any more bullets for him to take his own life. ABC News 15 reported that Lewis indicated to police that there were parts about the incident he didn't want to remember, leaving me to assume he was referring to the murder of his child. From everything I've read about this case, I haven't come across anything that reports any remorse Lewis had for killing Lene. I got the impression that he felt the murder was completely justified. Now, if you're like me, you've probably written Lewis off as a psycho, and hey, I don't blame you. He absolutely is. But according to Lewis, he suffers from schizophrenia, which is a very serious mental illness and can be dangerous when untreated. Now, I don't know whether or not he actually does have schizophrenia because I haven't seen any mention of psych evaluations confirming this status, but multiple news outlets mention Lewis's alleged mental illness. But one thing's for sure, detectives didn't need to look any further for the killer because they charged Lewis with the murders of his wife and child and first-degree burglary. Thankfully, a judge set a $2 million bond, so there's no way anyone will be bailing him out. And while it's great they didn't have to hunt for the offender, they still had to investigate the murders and the events that led up to them so that a prosecutor could secure a conviction. With that, they set out to interview family, neighbors, and coworkers. During their investigation, they began to find evidence and hear accounts of escalating violence, and that maybe it was less of what the aliens told Lewis to do and more of what he'd been ramping up to do all along. After Lene and Ava died, their family on Lene's side did a blitz campaign, if you will, about the dangers of domestic violence and how they encouraged Lene for years to remove herself and her children from Lewis's reach. Lene's twin sister Lauren Riley told Ashley Paredes for Arizona ABC News that her sister hesitated leaving Lewis because she was concerned about how the children would be impacted. Lauren encourages other victims of domestic violence to recognize the signs early enough to escape before things get too crazy and to ignore all those voices and questions that may be swirling in one's mind. Things like, I don't do anything right, or maybe he'll be different this time, or the kids love their daddy and they don't need bad thoughts about him. These are just a few concerns that victims of domestic abuse have that contribute to their hesitancy to escape. Couple that with the fact that leaving an abuser is the most dangerous time in an abusive relationship, and it's really easy to see why so many people like Lene stay in these toxic relationships. According to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, a U.S. Department of Justice program released the results of a research survey called Extent, Nature, and Consequences of Intimate Partner Violence. Part of that survey was a series of interviews of men who have killed their wives, and those men stated that threats of separation or actual separation were part of or were the sole catalyst for the deadly escalations. So when we consider that, we must keep in mind that victims of abuse are terrified their abusers will actually live up to the promise of deadly force. It's a lot to handle and can cause a lot of confusion and turmoil for the victims. Lene's parents and siblings knew how torn and stressed Lene was about her abusive situation, and that's why they set out to urge others who may be suffering to get help from professional sources as soon as possible. Getting the help of organizations set up to deal with the unique situations involved with intimate partner violence increases a victim's odds of survival. On top of that, as much as family and friends want to help, they are only equipped to do so much, and even doing those things often results in their own murders. In fact, an American Public Health Association conducted a study and concluded that 20% of homicides related to intimate partner abuse were not the domestic violence victim, but instead a family member, friend, coworker, or good Samaritan that intervened in the abusive relationship. So again, it's easy to see why a lot of the time families know about the abuse endured by their loved ones, but they don't want to risk their own safety, especially when the victim will likely stay in the relationship due to reasons previously mentioned. Domestic violence creates a plethora of double-edged swords for victims and their support groups that are really hard to overcome. This is why I try to refrain from passing judgment. You just don't know what people are going through, and it's easy to sit in the comfort and safety of my home, judging people barely surviving terrible events. That said, as I researched this case, I did find myself side-eyeing Lewis's mom, Sewilla, because of her actions during the violent encounter that claimed the lives of her daughter-in-law and grandbaby. So you know how I said Lewis broke into the apartment and Sewilla and her daughter ran out? Well, when they escaped the apartment, Sewilla ran to the parking lot and made a phone call. And no, it wasn't a call to the police like you'd imagine. When Lewis busted down her apartment door wielding a gun, she felt the urgency to call her boss, Roberto Morales, and report that she and Lene probably wouldn't be back to work for a while because a quote-unquote tragedy happened. Yeah, you heard that right. See, Lene and Sawilla both worked for the same company as high school bus drivers, and I guess Sawilla was compelled to call out for work, but somehow never managed to call the police. Now, am I tripping for looking at this sideways? According to Roberto Morales, when Sawilla called him, the violent encounter was actually going on as they spoke on the phone, and he didn't get notified that Lene was dead until around 3 a.m. the following morning. So, to be honest, I'm not sure what to make of all that, but I do have a ton of questions swirling in my head that I will refrain from sharing here, but I sure am hopeful more answers will be revealed about that because I'm curious to know more about Sawilla's involvement in the relationship. It's not lost on me that the couple lived with her, and frankly, I find it odd that when faced with this level of violence, her first reaction was to call her boss. So, who did call the police? Well, that would be Nancy Montana, a terrified neighbor. She called 911 when she heard Lene begging Lewis not to kill her. Nancy told reporters for ABC News that she was still in shock over what happened and that she could hear all the yelling, banging, and ultimately the barrage of gunfire from inside her own apartment. She was alone with her child and feared for their safety. Nancy said she heard Lewis yelling, quote, "I'm going to kill everybody here," end quote. She didn't know what else to do except call the police, which again is a normal reaction. And I really just can't get over the fact that the first call Sawilla made was to her boss. But okay, I'm gonna let it go. After hearing the gunshots, Nancy said she heard Lewis screaming something like, quote, "The devil made me do it," end quote. And not long after, the police arrived on the scene. In looking at this case, you can see just how pervasive domestic violence is to everyone around. From Lene and her children, to her family, to Lewis's family, to coworkers and neighbors, everyone was impacted by this. It's sad, but also really scary. Lene suffered for 16 years under a coercive and controlling relationship with Lewis. She was a sweet, good-natured woman who was known for being kind, giving, an excellent mother, and a dedicated employee. She was crafty and liked to crochet all sorts of cute and trendy things. She was artistic and surely had her own goals and aspirations that she will never experience now because of the mental illness and abuse of the one person sworn to protect and honor her. Precious baby Ava was not even 1 year old, and her entire future was stolen by her own father, the man who has the responsibility to also protect and provide for her. Her siblings, aunts and uncles, cousins and grandparents will never know who she would have become or what contribution she'd have made to this world. Everyone was robbed of the privilege to see this beautiful baby grow into a lovely, intelligent adult. The other three children will never know their youngest sibling beyond being an 11-month-old baby. They are also burdened with being without both mother and father. They will never have the privilege of having a hug from their mom or being walked down the aisle by their dad or family game nights or anything positive shared between parents and children. One man's selfishness altered the lives of all the people around him. If you or someone you know is suffering with domestic violence, please know you aren't alone. There are people and organizations ready to help you. You can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233 or visit them on the web at www.thehotline.org. If you're a teen and you're not quite sure about the signs of dating violence or whether or not you're in an abusive relationship, there's a resource for you too. LoveIsRespect.org is an organization that educates teens and young adults about the dangers of dating violence and provides resources for those in need of help. You can visit them on the web at loveisrespect.org. You can text LOVEIS to the number 22522, or you can call them at 866-331-9474. And if you're someone looking for ways to help, both organizations are in need of volunteers. And for my listeners with deep pockets, donations are always welcome and go a very long way to helping prevent more violent deaths like Lene's and Ava's. As always, thanks for listening. Be sure to connect with me on Instagram at misogynoirmurders. This is a Savvy Sounds production, written and produced by Renetta Rideout.